Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at httpvoicerepublic.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Gosh, you are not going to believe what they are talking about on the Strong Stance.
Good evening, back to us listeners. It is the Strong Stance once again, and this is your host, Eli Strong. I hope everybody is has had a good Thursday, and I hope that we can maybe in this next hour make it a little better. Tonight, we've got a very interesting topic. We are talking about elevation through celebration. We've got a couple of great guests that we're going to bring on and talk to us about, you know, the ways that celebrations and the queer community can kind of elevate and unify us. You know, when we talk about different things in the queer community that unite us, a lot of times we talk about the activism and the things that we do for our rights and to support each other. And oftentimes when we talk about celebration, we talk of it as kind of a way to relax and unwind with all that work and to, you know, celebrate who we are. But we don't often talk about the positive effects that those celebrations have on our community. And on top of that, a lot of times when we talk about it, we're really just talking about Pride and some of the larger events. But tonight, our couple of guests that we are going to have on are going to talk about some of the other events that are going on around the country that are smaller, that most folks don't either know about or think about, that do have that uplifting effect on our community. And we're going to talk about why they're so important and kind of what role they play in our lives as a support network for each other and just generally having a good time and meeting great people. So our first guest is a very good friend of mine, Ebony Bell. Ebony is the founder and managing editor of TAG Magazine, who you've all heard me talk about several times. TAG is a bi-monthly lesbian publication and website serving the D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and Rehoboth areas. Ebony has been immersed in the Washington metropolitan area LGBT community for several years. She's produced such events as the annual Capital Queer Prom, Capital Pride Women's Parties, Pride in the Sky, and the Put on the Gloves Fashion Show. Recently, she's being awarded with the 2014 Outstanding Virginian Award and won the 2012 Capital Pride Hero Award and the 2011 Trevor Project Outstanding Achievement Award. So, Ebony, I want to welcome you to the Strong Stance. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Ebony, you and I have known each other for several years, you know, and I've talked to some of your folks over at TAG Magazine or some of the folks that you plan events with. When we start talking about how we know Ebony or where we met Ebony and I start telling them how I knew you, they're like, dang, that was way back in the day. So, you know,
it was
a very long time ago. I feel like I met you right around the time or right before even. Actually, yeah, I met you right before I met my wife, and I have known her for almost 8 years. So it's been a long time. So I'm so glad to have you on the air this week. You've been doing some amazing things from the moment I met you, and it just feels like every time I think that Ebony Bell as a brand can't get any bigger, you do something else amazing and kind of expand that brand and expand the good work that you're doing in the community. And so, you know, I'm just so happy to have you on the air to talk about some of the things that you've done and some of the things you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That was very nice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that I really kind of want to talk about just kind of in general before we get into specific events is the importance of LGBTQ celebrations and how they kind of do that uplifting and uniting and engaging the community. And so, you know, because you've been in you've worn so many hats, if you want to tell our listeners some of the many hats that you've worn, not only from, you know, creating events, but back in your promoter days and all that other kind of stuff, if you just want to kind of give us a little taste of all the different ways that you've been involved in queer events.
Sure. So I probably started getting really involved in the D.C. area LGBTQ community, almost 10 years ago, maybe even more than that. And I was pretty much fresh out of college or just about to graduate college, and I winded up getting involved with the D.C. Drag King. So that was kind of my first introduction into the community, and seeing this group of individuals performing in a way that I've never seen before. So that always interests me. And kind of through that, I've kind of grown within the queer community as far as volunteering with Capital Pride and getting involved with different fundraisers to raise money for a lot of local nonprofits in the area. Also, that's when I started the Queer Women's Prom in 2006 as well. And basically that was started because I felt at the time that the lesbian community didn't really have something fancy that we could be involved in and, you know, get dressed up and have a great time for a good cause. So that was the first major event that I ever did. And then after that, it was such a success and such a good time that I realized that, you know, we should open the door to the entire community, to the prom. And so we decided to call it the Capital Queer Prom to make sure that everybody felt like they could be a part of this kind of second chance prom, if you will. So I've been involved in a lot of that. And obviously, as you said, I've also done a lot with Tag Magazine as well. And I feel like I've always liked to, I guess, fill voids in the community that I feel like aren't happening, where I feel like a lot of people are talking about it, but nobody's doing anything about it. So that's what really gets me excited, and I think we'll probably talk about it a little bit more, but I think being involved in all of these things, I think seeing the final product, it's a lot of hard work goes into it, but being able to have people come back and say, hey, I didn't get to have my prom, and I really appreciate the fact that you guys did this, or just seeing the connections and friendships being made throughout events is just, that stuff is priceless.
Yeah.
So a lot of what I do is for that. And it's interesting that you're talking about bringing the community together and unity, because I think that's exactly what we need. And we need to continue to make sure that we keep our community strong. And I think events is a great way to make sure that we're continuing to do that.
Yeah, I have to agree, and you know, maybe you can speak to this. I mean, I'm not really sure what your personal thoughts are, but for those of our listeners that have never really experienced the D.C. Queer scene, we, and when I say we, I mean the queer community in D.C., we have been accused for as long as I've lived here of being very segmented and very set apart. As opposed to when I lived in Alabama, you know, there was one gay bar and everybody went. It didn't matter whether you were a gay man or a lesbian or you know, there weren't really that many out trans folks, you know, at the time. But it didn't matter where you fell along that spectrum. There was one place to go. There was one group on campus. There was one kind of community, so to speak. And that happened a lot in the smaller areas where you don't have as many folks. And then I moved up here to D.C. and it was so weird, almost jarring to me how kind of segregated the community was. Like, I was told that, you know, lesbians aren't really welcome in this bar, and gay men aren't really seen going into this bar, and this bar you have to have a female escort or a male escort for this, that, and the other. And so, you know, I agree that I think that events really do kind of bring us together, because if there's one place where we can all get together, then we can start to meet those same people that we should be working with side by side to get what we need done, but for one reason or another, it just isn't happening, in the, whether it's the social scene or otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. So I absolutely agree with that statement, and I think that some people that still live in this area or have come to visit this area probably would still agree with the fact that, unfortunately, sometimes our community seems very segregated, not only by gender, but sometimes by race. identity, class, the list goes on and on and on. So it's something unfortunate, and I think that because of this area, I think we're just a product of our area, meaning, you know, the larger mainstream clubs, you know, if you really think about it, they kind of segregate themselves too. And I think we kind of take things for granted because we have more options than maybe you did in Alabama or smaller towns where pretty much there's only one place to go. So I think, unfortunately, we've just become a product of that. And, you know, it's really unfortunate because you're right. I think that, you know, we're missing out on meeting, you know, potential anything, potential friendships, potential jobs, potential love interest, whatever the case might be, we're really missing out. And I think that was something that always kind of disturbed me personally, was to see that, because that's not how I grew up. My mom always used to joke that all my friends, we were like the United Colors of Benetton. So I never really knew, you know, any different. So I think that was a big reason that I started to do events, was to bring all of these people together under one roof and say, hey, guess what? It's not so bad, and we can actually have a really great time with one another. And you just never know what will come from it, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, while we're talking about unity and inclusion and all that kind of stuff, one of the things that I do kind of want to touch on, because, you know, the Strong Stance is one of a series of Transgender Thursday shows. So predominantly our topics, we kind of talk about trans issues, whether it be privilege or, you know, transitioning or the different concepts that kind of intersect with that. One of the things that I've always really appreciated about most of the events that I've kind of attended of yours, because obviously I haven't gone to every event you've done, but I have been to a good portion of them. And I always feel like, you know, whether it's Tag Magazine or whether it's the events that you hold, that, you know, you're very conscious of including the trans community, whether that be trans women or trans men, in your events. And, you know, I'd love for you to talk about, you know, whether, obviously, sure, like you said, you were the United Colors of Benetton with your friends, and so it's always like you want to include everybody, but has there been something either rewarding or particularly important to you, which is why you kind of purposely kind of set out to include the trans community in all of these events? Because to be honest, you know, I mean, I'm sure that you probably know that the trans community is often an afterthought when it comes to the broader scale of the queer community.
So great question. So I think for those who don't know, and can't tell by my name. So I guess if I had to label myself, I am an African-American lesbian. So I think that probably has a big reason to do with the fact that I'm so adamant about inclusion. I think to myself of the time that I've gone out and the way that I've been treated because I'm Black, or the way that I've been treated because I happen to be a woman in a predominantly gay male establishment. It's not a good feeling, and I would never want anybody to feel the way that I felt in these circumstances, and sometimes still happening. So not to say that, oh, you know, I don't want anybody to ever feel bad, so I'm going to, you know, that's the reason. But I don't think it does anybody justice to discriminate against anybody. And I've continued to see my trans brothers and sisters continuously be left out of major events, major happenings. And unfortunately, also in this area, a lot of our trans sisters are, you know, even worse, being violated or abused or even murdered. And not to bring the topic down a little bit, but it's truth. And I've been to so many events that I continuously see gay white men all the time. We'll have, you know, an organization that caters to a lot of LGBT youth that happen to be African American, but then there's only 5% of African American people in the room. To me, that's a problem, and that's an issue. And how are these people, how are these young kids, who are they going to look up to? Somebody that looks like them. So I kind of go back to the whole
we're not really doing ourselves justice by not
right.
including the whole community. We just aren't.
Right.
I think,
yeah, no,
you know,
even
with starting, you know, tag and everything, I know we got a lot of flack for our tagline. And the only reason that we stuck with, you know, queer women or lesbian is just because it was a shorter tagline. But you read everything. We are super committed to making sure that anybody who identifies as queer, as lesbian, as bisexual, as trans, genderqueer, all relate. And honestly, I kind of feel like I'm a genderqueer individual as well. And I know how it feels to feel excluded from certain places because I don't look a certain way. I think it's just silly to discriminate, honestly. And I think that there's conversations to be had within the community. And if we just continue to ignore our trans brothers and sisters, then we're never going to get to know what the issues are and what they're dealing with. And same with the bisexual community, because sometimes they're also an afterthought as well.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that is, yeah, you hit the nail on the head with, because, yeah, it's usually that B and the T, and, you know, we're starting to talk about more about the trans community, but it's still often leaving out the bi community. So, but yeah, so I want to kind of slightly switch gears a little bit and getting to obviously some things that are coming up. I first want to talk about kind of your roots with Queer Prom, and, you know, you touched on this, but you know, you talked about it being kind of the history of you started it as a lesbian prom, and one of the things that I always loved is one of the feelings of, you know, so sort of a semi-tagline for Queer Prom was, you know, it was the prom you were supposed to have, right, but you
right.
didn't get a chance to. And so one of the things that I always loved about Queer Prom was not only that, you know, you put so much blood, sweat, and tears into it, like you can see it from every detail that happens, to changing the location around every now and then to different themes. You know, it wasn't just a show up and we'll have a DJ and some drinks or a band and a bar, right? It was like there was a casino night one year and you did it on a boat other years. And, you know, there was just all this different stuff. And so I'd love to find out from you what I know it's kind of like picking between your children, but what do you think was your favorite Queer Prom from the past?
Oh, man. Okay, so I might have to go rogue here and pick two because so hard for me to choose. So we've had seven, which is really amazing. And every year we've had, you know, anywhere from 250 to 400 people, just depending on the year. So I would say I think my first favorite year has to be the fifth anniversary, where we went back on the boat. And we had
yeah.
the entire boat, which was kind of a small victory as well, because the first time that we did the prom, you know, we only did half the boat, so we were just upstairs while another party was downstairs trying it
yeah.
out the first year. But we literally sold out. It was probably the most diverse crowd that we've ever had. And it was just such a blast just to see that we had a lot of new faces that never experienced that. Before, and, you know, even my mom came out, my girlfriend's mother came out. I think that's what's so fun about this event is everyone literally is welcome. You know, you see a lot
yeah.
of people that say that, but if you ever, you know, if you go back to our prom photos, it's very clear from age
yeah.
to race, to identity, all of that. Everyone is literally welcome, and I think the fifth anniversary really showed that. And in some ways it was a momentous occasion because it was 5 years of doing that. And it was just a great way to celebrate all the hard work that's been put in with the committee and everybody else that's been involved. And then just because I like fun and games, we had the carnival, which was 2 years ago, was probably another a favorite of mine just because it was really cool to see people playing games. We had this big, gorgeous ballroom, and in this ballroom you had, you know, basketball shooting games. You had people on stilts walking around. Like, we really transformed that room to make it look like a carnival, and people just had a blast from dancing
to playing games and just having a good time. And that's what it's about. It's about having a good time, you know, leaving your troubles at home and, you know, just enjoying your time and meeting people. That's what it's all about.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I think that one of the other great things about Queer Prom that I've always found amazing is that, you know, it's one thing if you want to hold an event for the community and say, hey, this is going to unify the community and we're going to have a chance to celebrate and we're going to meet new people. And so that's my contribution, is to do this. But that's not the only contribution of Queer Prom. In fact, in my opinion, it's not even the big reason why you do it. And so I'd love for you to talk about the different beneficiaries of prom, because I know that every year that ticket money does not just go to prom and into your pocket, right? So if you can tell
no.
our listeners about where that money comes, where that money goes, and how great buying a ticket is really for the community because you're reinvesting it. So if you could talk about some of that.
Sure. So when we first came up with this idea of having the second chance prom, the biggest thing was, again, as somebody who at the time was a young professional, not a lot of money, I kept seeing all these LGBT events, and they were easily $200 a ticket and more, where you dress
yeah.
up, you go out, and you eat, and you dance. And it was quite frustrating because you want to support, you want to go, but financially you can't. So
yeah,
we made sure,
that's my
reason,
problem most of the time.
Right. So we wanted to make sure that we could create an event just like those bigger events that are asking for $200, $300 a ticket, but only charge $50.
Yeah.
And give you that same experience. So that was one thing that we wanted to make sure that this was affordable for people. But we also wanted to, I think I'm a big softie when it comes for the underdog. When it comes to just organizations or people that, you know, work really hard, but maybe they're just the underdog. And so I wanted to make sure that not only were we giving back to the community and giving people this special moment, but I wanted to make sure we were literally giving money and fundraising for some amazing organizations out there. And specifically, we chose organizations that they have a big impact, but maybe they're just a little bit smaller. They don't have a big team. They're not like, you know, the big human rights campaign where they can easily fit 3,000 people in a room, $300.
Right.
You know, again, InterC does amazing work, and that's great that they're able to do that. But there's a lot of organizations that lose funding, you know, every year, and they're doing amazing things. And some of the folks that we've given back to the first year with the Women's Collective, and they're a small, actually lesbian-owned organization that supports and provides resources and services for women living with HIV and AIDS. So that was our first year. Second year, we gave back to 1 in 10, which puts on Real Affirmations here in D.C., which is a LGBT
yeah.
film festival. And they show some great films, and if, you know, people are in the area, please check them out, because they do amazing work, and their film festival is just, it's amazing. So there was that. Then we had the Wanda's Will Project, which has kind of graduated us now to Wanda Alston Foundation. So Wanda's Will Project was started by Women in the Life by Sheila Reed, who named it after Wanda Alston, who unfortunately was tragically killed
mm-hmm.
by some random person in her apartment building. And her partner never was able to receive benefits, the proper benefits and everything, because, you know, technically they weren't
yeah.
married. So Wanda's Will Project was started to educate the LGBT community on what to do in these situations, make sure you're covered, and all of that. And then now we've kind of graduated to Wanda Alston Foundation, which was created by somebody else who was a good friend of Wanda. And they started a home for LGBTQ homeless youth. which is so near and dear to my heart, especially because I've met some of these kids, and they're just amazing kids with bright futures ahead of them. And unfortunately, we still have situations where kids are kicked out of their homes because of who they are. So Wanda Alston Foundation not only provides housing, but provides educational services and resources for these kids to make sure that they make it and they're supported. So we've partnered up with them for the past 2 years now. And it's just, it's something that I continue to, you know, just have a soft spot for, because again, they're making such a big impact, because that's our future. You know, the LGBTQ youth are our future, and we have to support them. And unfortunately, you know, they're not bringing in, you know, millions of dollars like a lot of other other organizations. So if we can just raise anything for them and just bring awareness to the fact that they exist, then I feel like we've done our job.
Yeah, and honestly, what I love about the Wanda Alston House is that, you know, like you're talking about, it is a spot, it's an issue near and dear, and it should be nearer and dear to more people. And I understand that marriage is an important issue, but this is one of the things that a lot of people talk about, is that marriage is important. It's important to have your relationship seen as equal to that of a heterosexual couple in our society. But the fact is that when we've got LGBTQ kids on the street, this is where one of our main priorities should be. And so I've always loved what they've done. I always love the fact that that's one of those organizations that you guys keep coming back to and donating to, you know, and, you know, maybe 1 year you switch to something else, but then the next year it's like you're right back at Wanda Alston. So, I mean, I've always really loved that. And if I'm not mistaken, that is going to be the beneficiary of this year's event, correct?
It is. So we've definitely switched it up just a little bit.
Yeah, so let's talk about what's different. Let's talk about what's different this year as opposed to the queer prom of yesteryear in the last several years. What's different about your big event this year?
So we wanted to, now that, you know, I'm running the magazine, we wanted to, I got a group of people together, a committee, people from the community, and I said, you know, we love prom. We absolutely love prom, and it's you know, it's been my baby for 7 years. But I want to make sure that it makes sense for the magazine to produce, and it's along with our, you know, it goes along with our goal and our mission. And so we did a lot of talking. And essentially, we wanted to create an event that stayed true to TAG's mission. And my mission has always been to, one, fill a void within the community and make sure that we are providing content, stories, images, events that for the lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. That's
right.
Always been the first goal. And the second goal has been to bring our community together. Literally, our tagline is tag your it. So when you have to tag somebody, you have to touch them. So that's what we wanted to stay true to. So we came up with a very ambitious day called Tag Fest and Masquerade Gala. So essentially, it's two events in one day. So we were able to do a little something different during the day, but also still have that prom feel that a lot of our loyal patrons have kind of come to love. So Tag Fest is from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. In Washington, D.C. at Alma Shriner. And what we did is we came up with a schedule of breakout sessions. And right now, for only just $20, again, we go back to making sure these things are affordable. You can come in. We provide you a lunch and a drink. You know, whenever you want it. And then we've also come up with about 10 to 12 breakout sessions, everything from sex and relationship workshops to a self-defense class to aging in the LGBT community to even a craft beer taste facilitating that. So we wanted to really come up with things that we thought would bring our community together, no matter how you identify, no matter how old you are, something for everyone. And then later on, we open the place back up at night in the ballroom, and we just celebrate. Literally, it's a day of connecting and a night of celebrating. So we'll have a DJ, just very similar to prom. We'll have a DJ, music and dancing, silent auction, heavy hors d'oeuvres. First two drinks are on us, thanks to our wonderful sponsors. And the list goes on and on. It's just a good time to dress up, put on, you know, your suit, put on your dress, you know, wear a fun mask, and just have a good time with a bunch of amazing queer people and allies.
Yeah, that's awesome. And for those of our listeners that are either in the D.C. area or will be on that weekend, and this, again, is April 26th, I highly recommend you look into this event because, you know, like Ebony was saying, not only are the tickets for Tag Fest affordable, but then also the ticket for Masquerade is affordable. And I think that you guys also did kind of like a combo deal, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so right now, for folks that are listening and are interested in going, we do have early bird rates right now, which are very affordable because we want to make sure everyone can go. And those early bird rates will end at the end of this month, actually March 30th, not even March 31st. So make sure you go on there. You can get, if you just want to go to Tag Fest, maybe you just want to go to a craft beer tasting or you just want to learn about how to build your family, you can just get a ticket to Tag Fest. If you could care less about Tag Fest and you just want to party, you can just get a ticket to the Masquerade, and then, yeah, then we offer combo tickets. And a lot of people are doing that because they're interested in, you know, meeting other people, having a good time, and going to these sessions, and then later on having a good time again with these same people and dancing the night away. So, there's three options to get tickets, and again, they're super affordable right now. So if anybody, you know, listening is in the area, definitely check out tagfest.com.
Yeah, so and for those of you that are listening, I will be there at both events, so there's going to be quite a few people there. It's something that I'm really looking forward to. My wife, if she can get off work, when I said Masquerade to her, she immediately pulled up Pinterest and started looking for masks. So she's hoping to get to go as well. But Ebony, I just want to thank you so much for taking some time. I know that you are actually on your way to a fundraiser for Tag Fest as we speak. So I want to respect your time and just say thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us, you know, what you've given to the community, what you're giving back to the community, and how, you know, these events are really just so important for the D.C. metro area queer community and everything that you're doing. It's amazing, and I feel like every time you call me and ask me if I want to be involved in some new business venture of yours, I cannot wait to at least get my toe in the door. So, again, I just want to thank you so much. And for those of you that are listening, if you want to know my personal favorite Ebony planned or Ebony executed event, it was actually my wedding in 2011. Ebony and her girlfriend were graciously our week of wedding planners, and they made sure
yes.
that my wife got down the aisle on time, and we had a blast. I still have friends come up to me and go, "That was the best party I've ever been to." So if you have any question about whether Ebony is a great party planner, promoter, and just general human being, trust me from experience. You got to experience one of these events. They're amazing. So, Ebony, again, thank you so much. And I will let you get on your way, but I really appreciate you taking the time out.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me and the support you're giving TagFest. And we're looking forward to having you on our panel for the trans
yes.
panel at TagFest. So thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for those listeners, I think that you know right about what time it is. I finished paying some personal bills right before the show started, but I think now we need to pay some bills for Back to Us Radio. Anise, are you ready to pay some bills?
You mean you're not, you know, you got that huge promotion at work, so what you're telling me is that you're not going to pay all of our bills?
Well, I'll tell you this. Speaking of giving back to the community, I did get a big promotion at work. And the way I put that promotion to use was we had a person in the community who needed some help. And so my wife and I invited him into our home, and he is living with us, and that is my promotion, sister. So, and we are happy to do it, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to ask you for a continuance on my due date on these Back to Us bills.
Well, you know what, Eli? Fortunately, Kappa Omega Omicron saw, you know, that you got the promotion. They saw that you were helping in the community. And they said, you know what? We don't want Eli to have to go out there and panhandle on the corner of 8th Street in front of the Hilton anymore.
That's right.
So we're going to write. That's where the Hilton was, right, on 8th Street? Somewhere
there are
over
so many
there.
Hiltons in this city, girl.
It's somewhere over there. Anyway, don't mess up my story. But they didn't want you panhandling, so Kappa Omega Omicron wrote us a check, and they have covered all of our airtime for the entire year, so we don't have to beg, borrow, steal for airtime. And you know, and that's huge, because when you run a radio station, the biggest expense is airtime. And I just have to say, you know, I love Tag Magazine. You know, Tag Magazine has been near and dear to my heart for probably over a year now. And I'm so excited that we had the opportunity to have Ebony on air tonight. And I am super excited about Tag Fest. The website for Tag Fest is Tag, T-A-G-G, Fest, F-E-S-T.com. Again, that's tagfest.com. And that link is also on our show page for tonight. So please go there, buy a ticket. Even if you're not in the area, just buy a ticket to support. You know, because I'm really thinking about D.C. on the 26th.
You should really think about D.C. on the 26th. Do you know that if it was not for Tag Magazine, I would not be on this show? Because that is how I met Michelle, and that is how I met you. So Tag Magazine really should partially be credited for the strong stance.
Absolutely. You know, and I got a lot of my show ideas from the very beginning when I launched Back to Us Radio from some of the articles in Tag Magazine. So, yeah, between Tag Magazine and A Girl's Guide, I mean, that was what gave us our content. And that was what got us to 30,000 listeners in less than a year. All right, let's see. What else do we have going on? There's one other announcement that I promised someone that I would make. Oh, the Carrie's Law petition. Guys, we are up to 443,000 signatures. That's
whoa.
The petition isn't even, I think it just turned 3 months old. So it's not even 4 months old yet. So in less than 120 days, we have gathered 443,000 signatures.
That's crazy.
But, of course, you know me, we need more. We need 500,000 signatures. So if we can do 443,000 in less than 120 days, I know we can get to 500,000 in 60 days. So, guys, please continue to share. Please continue to post. Please continue to sign, you know, because there's no reason why you should have to dial 9 and then 911 when you need help at a hotel.
So true.
So those are my two announcements for tonight, and I'm really excited about our next guest.
Yes.
So who are we bringing on next, Eli?
Our next guest is Joshua Burford. And he and I, we don't go back quite as far as Ebony, but we do go back a ways. And Josh is an archivist and an activist and a radical educator with over 15 years of experience working with minority communities and diversity education. Josh began his teaching career in 1998 and has successfully found ways to combine his academic interests with direct outreach to communities that are underrepresented. Josh entered the world of student affairs in 2007 and has been advocating for minority students ever since. Josh has been working for the past 8 years training educators, counselors, and administrators how to make their environments and outreach more inclusive to the LGBTQ individuals. And Josh currently works in the Multicultural Research Center at UNC Charlotte as the Assistant Director for sexual and gender diversity. Josh, are you with us, or have you ridden a train away?
I am here, but apparently I'm like 3 seconds away from getting on a train.
Oh, yeah.
There it is again.
Hey, look.
Yeah.
It's we're going to start calling you Josh Night Train. Night Train Burford.
It's not the worst nickname I've ever had, that's for sure.
Oh, Lord, let's not get into that. That is for another conversation. So one of the reasons that I really wanted to have you on is not only do you and I go a ways back in the queer community and in small towns and southern states like Alabama, because for those of our listeners that are wondering, Josh and I both met at the University of Alabama, and I think that I had actually probably left the campus before we had officially met, but I knew of you while I was a student, while I was a grad student, and you did some amazing things at Alabama, and then you kind of took a hop, skip, and a jump over to UNCC and have been doing some amazing things over at Charlotte, you know, whether it was running one of the many events or having one of the many speakers, my humble self included, you know,
yeah,
come out there. It's just, it's amazing the community of the people that I met when I was out there. They just seem like such great kids that you're working with. And so, you know, I really kind of want to get a taste for some of the things that you've done at both campuses, because I know that you were involved in quite a few things at both Alabama and Charlotte. And I know that we don't have a ton of time, but I would love to hear some of the things that you've been doing on some of those Southern college campuses for the queer community.
You know, I think the most important thing that we do, in both at UA and at UNC Charlotte, is to try to give our Southern queer kids a sense of what their local community looks like. You know, most of them are operating from a very familiar Southern narrative, which is if they can just make it to a particular point, then they can escape the South for these theoretical better places, right? And
right.
So we're trying to give them a sense of what it's like and the history of what it means to be queer in the South. And so we spend a lot of time connecting them with local activists and grassroots organizations, and then teaching them what it's like to have community where they live and not in some mythical other place. And so I think our most successful program that we...
No, go ahead. Your most successful program?
Yeah, the most successful program we run right now, I think, is our first-year experience. It's called Queer Year One. And we have...
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. We have 367 freshman students who identify as queer, and we put them through, basically just sort of teach them what it's like to be involved in a community where they're visible and their identities are important and they're celebrated, and we teach them the complexities of queer experience they're not getting in the popular culture, they're not getting where they live because a lot of them are from small towns. And then in the second semester, we put them back into the community, so they're doing direct volunteer activism and they're working with organizations. And so it's great. I mean, we've run this is our first full year with a group this big, and it's overwhelming to have that many students, but they're doing so much good work locally.
Yeah, no, that sounds amazing, especially, you know, the fact that you not only plug them in and give them what they need, but then you also re-plug them in on the back end, kind of giving that back. That's incredible. So what kind of things do you guys do? I mean, obviously you have events on campus where you'll either whether it's have speakers come in or do different kinds of meetings, but what kinds of celebrations do you guys hold at UNCC for mostly your queer-identified students?
I think our two biggest things that we do National Coming Out Day in October.
Right.
And the way we envision National Coming Out Day for our students is we bring the people that are part of their community to them, right? So we kind of change that narrative a bit. It's less about them coming out as a particular identity and more about all the other people that are surrounding them who are different than they are. So we like to show the diversity of the community. So we bring in queer people of color, we bring in trans people, bring gender fluid and non-binary people in, so that the students can see what the community looks like off campus, because that's really important, because their campus is a bubble. And so our National Coming Out Day has a very specific feel. It's about them seeing what's possible, which I think is it's a different way of looking at National Coming Out Day. And so I think the coming out story has gotten a little muddy in the 21st century. And so we want them to think about what it means to be out in a diverse community of people. And then at the end of the year, we do a celebration for all of our Safe Zone allies, because we train faculty and staff and community people all year long. At the very end of the year, we put our students in front of the Safe Zone allies so that our students can ask these people who have opted in to support the community, you know, ask them questions. What are you doing for queer people on campus? How can you help us? And so the students love it. It's sort of a chance for them to be on the other side of the podium from their professors, and they can interrogate them a bit about what they're doing actively to be allies for the queer community. It's great.
Well, that's kind of empowering too. I mean, because you know you have a situation where you're normally the one, not necessarily taking orders, but you're kind of looking to a professor and to kind of flip that script and be able to have the professor or the instructor kind of look to you and, you know, you be asking the questions. I feel like that can be very empowering, especially for young activists that, like you said, are in a bubble of a college community and may be looking for a way out of the South and the things that they're doing. So that's
well,
that's
I want to remind them of where we started, right? Like the movement
exactly.
began with young activists. And so I want them to see what's possible. And part of that flipping the script is about sort of, you know, empowering them to tell the people that are their theoretical superiors, right, because of experience and degrees and whatnot, this is how we want you to do the work. And so putting the effort on the youth to tell the grown folks in the community, this is what you need to do. This is what we're telling you need to do. And it empowers them to be more participatory, which is really important, I think.
Yeah, no, and it also, you know, some of the things that you're doing kind of, especially with what you're talking about Coming Out Day, bringing in people and showing them what's possible, it's almost a spin on, I mean, don't get me wrong, the effort had its great moments, but the quote-unquote it gets better is kind of getting kind of stale and it's kind of old. Like, there's only so many times you can say it gets better before you go, that's great, but right now I have to live in the now. And so I think it's really great that you're kind of offering them another perspective of this is what's possible, so you don't have to wait for it to get better. These are ways that you can start to take control and kind of see that all these things can be better even now, just with kind of a change of your mental mindset of, you know what, it may not be as great as I want it to be right now, but if this is possible, then maybe it's not as bad as my brain has led
right.
me to believe it is.
We know so much of youth activism that's created by adults is sort of like well-intentioned condescension. You know, like the idea that it gets better if you can just hang on until you're like a fully functional adult, that's a really condescending thing to say to young people. So you're not ready now, but we'll get back to you when you're ready. That's crazy. I mean, we've got to empower them to not have to wait until they're in their 30s to be activists. Like, you could be activists now. And I don't know. It's
and
really
not have to wait until they're in their 30s to be happy.
Exactly, right. And better than what? I mean, it gets better than what, exactly? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So your life is really crappy now, but it's going to be fun. I mean, potentially that might be true, but it's not going to be true if you're not doing anything about it, right? If you're just hanging on. But, no, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Well,
ever since
you asked me about celebrations, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, what it means for us to call our celebrations Pride celebrations, right? And
right.
Like Pride was the antithesis of where we were. Like, we were isolated and invisible, and no one saw us, and we were, you know, mentally unstable. And so we called our celebrations Prides because we were proud of who we were. And I think we've forgotten that narrative. I think we've forgotten that what it means to go to a Pride celebration and say, this is who I am. We're not asking you to enjoy it. I'm enjoying it. And so you do you.
Right.
And I think we've forgotten that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that it's also, you know, I think that we do forget a lot of things in Pride. And I feel like Pride's one of those things where it was kind of like this great snowball where it had all these wonderful little pieces all encompassed in this little ball. And as it rolled down the hill, it became so massive and so monstrous that now it's just a weekend, or if you live up in D.C. or other large cities where they make it a whole week of events, of just it's just this monstrosity of parties and drinking. And not to say that that's a bad thing, but you kind of forget where it started, and it just feels like this thing that everybody goes to. And what I love about some of the events that we're talking about tonight is that they're smaller scale. They have a larger, in my opinion, a larger impact, because you're not just a drop in the bucket. You are a very, you know, a very willing and important and integral participant in these events. When you have these, whether it's telling your professor this is how you should be doing the work, or buying a ticket to go to see. Now, great, that's amazing. 200 to 400 people, like Ebony was talking about, that's great. But when you talk about a Pride in a large city, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. So even at a 200 to 400 person scale, that's a small event that's really amazing in the way that you can impact the community. And some of the things that I love that you've done is you're great at finding little kernels to and seeds to plant, or taking a little sapling and kind of, you know, influencing it to grow, and then kind of going, okay, now if you need me, I'm going to be here, but you're great right now, so I'm going to go plant another seed. And I feel like I can never keep my finger on the pulse of what you are doing, because as soon as you get something to be a well-oiled machine, man, you're out of there. You're like, okay, great, it's running on its own, you delegate, you do this. I'm going to go start another train down this track, and we're going to click-clack along.
I mean, it's good for them.
Yeah.
My students are doing a fundraiser tonight. They raised several thousand dollars for a local AIDS outreach organization, and they've got it. Like, they don't need me in that space. They've made the arrangements. They've paid the performers. They're going to raise the money, and it freaks them out when I don't show up, but I don't need to be there, right? Like, I've done my job. They can handle it. Let's move on to the next group, right? We've got other people.
Yeah, no.
Hour.
Absolutely. So a couple of things that I want to touch on, I think we've probably got a couple more minutes, but I want to touch on a couple of the things that you've done at the University of Alabama. If you can, I know that you had some kind of hand in Lavender Graduation, and I'd love for you to give folks a brief kind of what is Lavender Graduation and kind of what your hand in it at the University of Alabama was.
So Lavender Graduation ceremonies are really important. I mean, our students are – they're small minorities within larger groups of people. And so lab grad is a way for us to pull them out of that mass of graduating seniors and then give them their own space, not just so we can celebrate the fact that they're finishing, but celebrate their individual achievements as queer-identified people. And so lab
right.
graduations are so important because it gives them a sense of, this is what you've accomplished as a member of this community, and the community is celebrating you. So several years ago, my colleague Renee Wells and I decided that it was time that UA had 11 graduation. And so we pulled a group of students. We had a really large group the first year. And we sat them in a room, and we brought in someone to inspire them. And then we pulled them up and said, this is what 4 years of queer activism or queer participation in community looks like. And it was amazing to see the resistance because, well, you know, the students, I don't know that I don't need to be recognized. I didn't do that much, except that they did, right? Like overcoming and finishing. I mean, the retention rate for queer-identified students is terrible in the U.S.
Yeah.
We have got
yeah.
to celebrate the fact these students are not just finishing, but they're doing so well and going on to be
yeah. –
I mean, a lot of that first group of students that graduated, they're out in nonprofits and making films and, like, pointing back at community, and that's what we have to celebrate.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing event, and – the one other thing that, again, that I would quickly just love to hear about that I was less familiar with is that you started something like an archiving project at one of the libraries at the University of Alabama. Can you
yeah.
refresh my memory, A, on what it is and talk about that?
So it's called the Miller Stevens Archive at UA, and basically we started collecting the student group history. It was almost 25 years old. This 2012, I think, was 25 years old. And then we started collecting all the group's history going back to its, you know, its founding in the early 80s. And to have an LGBT group at UA in the early 80s was a big deal. That was way ahead of its time in
yeah.
the South. And so we started bringing in materials with people, and then the collection sort of grew and grew, and we got individual donations. And so that collection now is actually the nucleus of a larger sexuality studies archive at the University of Alabama, which is amazing. And it's named after
yeah.
the first two advisors of the group, and it's... And I'm actually doing a similar project here, but like on a bigger scale. We're collecting Charlotte's queer history, and so we're bringing it all together. And it's just so important to have it in that space. And the Miller Stevens Archive, I think, represents like the collective activism and energy and powerful, you know, I don't know, powerful ideas of the queer community in Alabama, which should not theoretically exist, right? Because those things don't happen
right.
in conservative states, right? You can't see my finger quotes, but I'm making those.
Yeah,
and so,
I gotcha.
And so the archive is great, and it continues to grow. And, you know, I've left it, it's doing its thing, and it continues to grow every year, and it's amazing that it's still there.
Yeah, it really is. Well, Josh, I hate that we have to cut this short because I know that you and I could talk about this stuff for probably hours, and I'd love to have you back sometime, and we can talk about some other great things that you're doing. For any of our listeners out there that are considering colleges, please know that if North Carolina is anywhere on your list, I highly recommend you looking up the Multicultural Center at UNCC. giving Josh or one of those other folks a call. They've got a really great program over there, and I think that you'd probably be pretty happy with at least a campus visit or something.
Yeah.
The amount of acceptance that I saw when I was there at an event just blew me away. And so, again, Josh, I just want to thank you so much for joining us and kind of contributing to this topic.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So for those of our Strong Stance listeners that are still with us, you know, I think that this is an important topic. I think that we need to celebrate the small wins, and I think that we need to celebrate just the celebrations and look at them not just a time to relax and unwind, which is very necessary in what we do, but also look at them as a time to be able to really uplift and unite our community and look at them in a way that you maybe haven't looked at them before. And so look up small events that are in your area. You know, if you're in the D.C. area, please consider, if you're going to be here on April 26th, consider coming to TagFest or just buying a ticket and donating like Anise was talking about. And again, that's TagFest, TAGGFEST.com. And you'll be able to look at all the events and the breakout sessions and buy tickets right there on the site. So I just want to thank everybody again for tuning in tonight and listening to this topic. It's one of our less controversial topics. It's nice to have a light Thursday where we talk about good things and giving back in a way that's fun and re-energizing, because the last thing that we want is burnout. And so I'm going to leave you tonight with another unwinding kind of moment, which is going to be one of my favorite songs that we always play on this show. Anise, would you like to introduce this song yet again on this show? I feel like every time you say we're going to play it, I just kind of jump for joy inside.
This is Breathe In by Boom Clack and Be Steady, and this is one of my favorite songs. So, let's unwind a little bit. It's almost time for Scandal. Here's Breathe In. Go grab that glass of wine, and we will see you all next Thursday.
Thanks, everyone.
Just close your eyes. my heartbeat racing.
Just let go of your hesitation.
I'm trying to stop the boom of these good vibrations.
We need just to have this moment.
So I stop the hands of time, you're who I've chosen.
You can't sit here and tell me that you don't want it. Just breathe in.
You have been listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at http://voicerepublic.com.